This is The Guardian.
Today, as yet another Tory MP crosses the floor to join Labour, is all hope lost for Rishi Sunak? Before we start, a quick warning, there is a little bit of swearing in this episode, and you can thank Suella Braverman for that.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Retain steelmaking at Port Talbot, and not only in Port Talbot, actually, but at other Tata sites, including Llanwern and Shotton.
Kieran Stacey, The Guardian's political correspondent, was sitting high up in the press gallery at the House of Commons on Wednesday when he realised that something was afoot.
First, I could tell there was a bit of a buzz around the press gallery. People were craning their heads to try and see something on the Labour benches. I couldn't quite tell what was going on.
It was Prime Minister's questions, and everyone was expecting Rishi Sunak to get a bit of stick. After all, the Tories had performed so badly in last week's local elections, losing almost 500 councillors and a string of high-profile mayoralties.
And then Rishi Sunak entered the chamber about 2 minutes before the session starts, as is normal. And suddenly there was this great kerfuffle. And Penny Mordaunt is kind of in conversation with people next to her. She's looking over at the Labour benches. And she stands up then and she rushes over to the Prime Minister before he sits down. She mutters something in her ear. And he then pats her on the arm and they both go and sit down and both have furrowed brows. That certainly tells me that neither of them were expecting it. None of us sitting in the press gallery were expecting it.
Rishi Sunak had been ambushed by something that neither he nor almost anyone else in Westminster had seen coming.
Can I also warmly welcome the new Labour MP for Dover to these benches?
One of his MPs, an MP on the right of his party, had taken her seat on the wrong side of the Commons. Natalie Elphick, the Conservative MP for Dover, had crossed the floor.
If 1 week a Tory MP who's also a doctor says the Prime Minister can't be trusted with the NHS...
It was the second defection from the Tories to Labour within a fortnight, after NHS doctor Dan Poulter crossed the floor, saying he could no longer look his patients in the eye and tell them to vote Conservative.
And the next week, the Tory MP for Dover, on the front line of the small boats crisis, says the Prime Minister cannot be trusted with our borders and joins Labour. What is the point of this failed government staggering on?
With two such dramatic and visual votes of no confidence in Rishi Sunak, it's becoming increasingly difficult for the Prime Minister to put a brave face on his leadership.
Rishi Sunak's been talking about the possibility of a hung parliament this week, using the local election results to try and gee up his Tory MPs to tell them there is a chance that Labour won't get a majority at the next election. But just as he's doing that, we see a new poll out on Thursday from YouGov showing Labour now has a 30-point lead in the national polls. That is an absolute mountain for the Prime Minister to climb.
From The Guardian, I'm Helen Pidd. Today in Focus, Rishi Sunak's tired and chaotic government staggers on. But for how long? Kieran Stacey, you're The Guardian's political correspondent, talking to us from Parliament today. Can we start by going backwards to the local and the mayoral elections in England last week? Just how bad was it for the Tories?
Well, they'd set themselves a series of challenges which they had to clear for it to be a good night. The three main ones were 500 council seat losses, holding on to the mayoralty in Tees Valley and holding on to the mayoralty in West Midlands. They held on to Ben Houchen's seat in the Tees Valley, which was always going to be the most certain of those. Ben Houchen won 73% of the vote last time around, so for him to lose would have been completely catastrophic. So, all right, they avoided complete catastrophe, but probably they're in the realms of catastrophe. So the Tories lost 474 seats, so just shy of that 500 marker, but you know, pretty much there. Losing the West Midlands was a big blow. And of course, they lost the Blackpool South by-election on a swing, which suggested that Labour's easily heading for a majority government come the election later this year.
Christopher Paul Webb is duly elected as the Member of Parliament for the Blackpool South constituency.
An emphatic victory for Labour's Chris Webb in Blackpool South. A majority of more than 7,500 and a 26% swing. Enough to put Sir Keir Starmer in Downing Street.
So it was a pretty dire set of results, albeit not quite the worst case scenario for the Tories. What did Rishi Sunak have to say about it at the start of the week? And how has he been trying to rally support?
Well, at first he tried to describe them as a mixed set of results. And then he made a very interesting statement to the Times in which the Prime Minister accepted, really for the first time, you know, if this is repeated at a general election, we're going to lose, which is quite an extraordinary thing for a sitting Prime Minister to say. But what he added was, Labour's not going to win a majority government. And that's because of this piece of analysis by the two polling experts, Colin Rawlings and Michael Thrasher, which suggested that if the whole country were to vote, just as the local elections happened, then it would be Labour winning, but as the largest party, not a majority. And so the Tories have been going around Westminster for the last couple of days saying, well, prepare for minority government, prepare for chaos, prepare for coalitions with fringe parties or with the Lib Dems. And, you know, this is the kind of attack that they used very successfully against Ed Miliband in 2015. The problem is this time, it's just not what the national polls are saying. And I think very few people out there believe that unless there's a major change between now and the general election, that Labour are not going to win a majority.
And what kind of things have we been hearing from Tory MPs, given that the results were pretty bad for the Conservatives? Was there any lingering threats to actually try and topple him?
Do you know what? One of the most interesting things I thought about that period around Friday, Saturday, Sunday, after all the votes had been cast and were now being counted and announced, was that these rebels that we've been hearing so much about for the last few weeks, people around Suella Braverman and Robert Jenrick, who were just prepared to unveil what they called a grid of shit, a whole week's worth of bad stories that we're going to get rid of the Prime Minister and they could install a new unity candidate. That all unraveled almost immediately. So by Friday morning, you've got Andrea Jenkins, who's one of the most outspoken critics of Rishi Sunak on the Tory benches. She's a fierce ally of Boris Johnson. She went on the BBC at Friday morning at 8 o'clock, you know, before a lot of these contests had actually declared, and said, we're stuck with what we've got, essentially. We're going to have to stick by Rishi Sunak.
I think we've still got a skin in the game, so to speak. Mm. But yes, it's going to be one hell of a fight that we have to pull it back. But
and I think what that tells us, the speed of that capitulation by the rebels, tells us they never really had the numbers in the first place. And they probably didn't have a candidate behind whom they could all rally. For all the talk of, oh, it could be Penny Mordaunt, it could be Suella, it could be somebody else, Kemi Badenoch, it just never happened.
And then on Wednesday this week, we saw this moment in the Commons where the MP Natalie Elphick crossed the floor to join Labour. Why is there so much anger about Keir Starmer's decision to welcome her into the Labour family?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. Firstly, on policy, Natalie Elphick is not somebody from the centre of the Tory party. She's not somebody that any of us expected to see crossing the floor. And she's not somebody who in the past has supported what we would think of as Labour values. She's been very hardline on immigration. She has supported the Rwanda policy. And if she's had disagreements with it, it's basically been that it's not hard enough. But it's not just policy that I think that Labour MPs are worried about. There's also her personal conduct. She was suspended, along with a group of other Tory MPs in 2021, for having tried to influence the judge in the sexual misconduct trial of her husband, Charlie Elphick. That was very serious incident. And I think a lot of Labour MPs thought at the time that she was guilty of downplaying the very serious charges against her then husband, Charlie. And she did an interview at the time where she said essentially that he wasn't to blame for this. He was a good looking man. She said it was something like, it's not his fault if he's attractive and attracted to women. So, you know, I think a lot of Labour MPs feel that this is not the kind of person they want in their parliamentary party, especially when there's lots of people on the left who've been suspended, not least Diane Abbott, who has a lot of supporters in the party who think, well, why is it that we've got Natalie Elphick, who now has the whip, but not Diane Abbott?
We should say that yesterday, Natalie Elphick apologised for having dismissed the claims made by the women who were sexually assaulted by her ex-husband. And she said it had been an incredibly stressful and difficult period in her life. Nonetheless, the anger remains in the Labour Party. And would you say that's mainly among the left of the party, those people who would be aligned with the likes of Diane Abbott? Or is it more widespread?
I think it's really interesting. This time, I think Keir Starmer has angered quite a lot of people from quite a broad spectrum within the party. I mean, look at the comments from Neil Kinnock, who, okay, centre-left maybe, but certainly not of the McDonnell Corbyn tendency.
I think we've got to be choosy to a degree about who we allow to join our party, because it's a very broad church, but churches have walls and there are limits.
An example of the debates going on within Labour right now, some Labour MPs were saying on Wednesday, who's next for the Labour Party? Nigel Farage.
And do you think that the backlash might have taken even Keir Starmer by surprise?
If the backlash took Keir Starmer by surprise, then I think he has made a political miscalculation. He should have realised that this was always going to be controversial with large parts of his party. I suspect that he knew something would come his way. Maybe it's been slightly more intense than he was expecting. But I also think he's made a calculation. You know, this is a move that he thinks will impress people who are not natural Labour voters, who are not maybe part of the Westminster bubble, who probably don't really know who Natalie Elphick is, but might see those parts of her statement where she said that the government doesn't have a clue, doesn't have a plan on immigration, which is a very powerful message for Labour to be able to sell to the electorate.
And do you think that the backlash against Elphick's defection might deter Labour from allowing any other Tory MPs to cross the floor?
I think they're desperate to get more Tory MPs to cross the floor. And I know that they're working on that. And I would expect more defections to come. I think they've got to think carefully about the type of person they bring in. There probably aren't too many Natalie Elphicks around, to be honest. Although she is from the right of the party, she's also a bit of a maverick. She's difficult to pin down. And her views on housing, for example, are very close to Labour's. I think they're more likely to attract over more centrist types in the future. But I think the thing that Keir Starmer has to be careful of is one of the reasons clearly that Natalie Elphick decided to cross the aisle was her personal animosity towards the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. That really came through in her statement afterwards. There are a lot of people in the Tory party who feel the same way and feel very loyal, especially to Boris Johnson. There are probably quite a few of those who do feel like they want to punish Sunak in some way. Labour's got to be careful about attracting all of those.
And do you think that Elphick now will be essentially muzzled now that she's a Labour MP? We know that she's previously supported the Tories' Rwanda policy. Do you think there's any chance she's going to be still supporting that, or will she just be staying strum, do you think?
Well, we don't know exactly whether she still supports the Rwanda policy. She apparently is, I'm told, not doing media interviews. And when asked about this, the party chair, Annalise Dodds, seemed a little unsure about what exactly Natalie Elphick's views were on this. But I'm sure she will have the party line drummed into her over the next few weeks.
I remember in 2022, I spent quite a bit of time with Christian Wakeford, who was the MP for Bury South, not long after he had defected from the Conservatives to Labour. And he cut quite a lonely figure. I remember he'd been given a new office in Parliament on a corridor with all of the hard left Corbynista ultras who were deeply, deeply mistrustful of him. And at the same time, he was probably understandably, right, being shunned by his old colleagues, some of whom he's best friends. One of them was best man at his wedding, and they felt that he'd completely betrayed them. And yet, 2 years on, he's doing okay for himself. He's now a Labour whip, which I find quite astonishing. He's tasked with actually telling Labour MPs what to do, which is quite a turn of events. But I remember thinking at the time, it really wasn't clear how his story would end. What do you think Natalie Elphick will be feeling right now?
It must be a really difficult thing to defect from one party to the other, particularly to cross the aisle in that kind of very visible way. You lose your friends. I mean, The first thing that happened to Natalie Elphick, I know, is that she was expelled from all the Tory WhatsApp groups. And then in a way, that must be difficult as well. The same people that you've been talking to, you know, for weeks and weeks and weeks, years even, suddenly are not going to talk to you anymore. They're going to shun you. They're not going to stop in the corridor and have a chat. This isn't just any other opposition MP. This is a traitor. It must be a very difficult and very lonely thing to do. And then there's always the problem that you're viewed with suspicion among members of your new party as well. I suspect that defectors usually, and I don't know if this is the case with her or with Dan Poulter, but I suspect defectors are usually promised something, whether that's, you know, a job in the next government or a seat in the House of Lords. And I'm sure that will sweeten the deal.
And of course, she's not the only MP to defect from the Tory party in the last 6 weeks or so, is she?
Dan Poulter defected just a week ago. He's a doctor and he was citing concerns that he had about the NHS. And then, of course, there was Lee Anderson defecting to Reform just, you know, a month or two ago, also with great fanfare, sitting now as Reform's only MP.
Please welcome Mr. Lee Anderson.
A grand unveiling, a defector from the Tories. Handful of Reform Party backers clapped
in. On one calculation, if Rishi Sunak keeps losing his MPs to Labour at the current rate, within 15 weeks he won't have a majority at all. And that's with the Conservatives having won a majority of around 80 at the last election. So you can already see, I think, through a number of things, by-elections, defections, people being suspended from the party, that the Tory majority has already been taken down by half since the last election. I would expect more defections to come. And the problem is for Sunak that this just increasingly looks like rats deserting a sinking ship. So for all of his rhetoric around chaos under Labour and hung parliaments and, you know, stick with the plan is working. If he keeps seeing his MPs leave from under him, he increasingly looks like the Prime Minister presiding over chaos and maybe even soon a hung parliament.
Of course, we all get very excited about these defections, but historically, do they actually change the dial for a political party?
I think what they are is they build a sense of momentum towards the opposition. So pre-1997, there were some defections, actually post-1997, I think there were some defections as well to Labour. What it increasingly does in the public's mind is build a picture of one party is so sure of winning and that Westminster is so sure they're going to win that everybody's deserting to them. And it's quite a powerful thing to look like a winner in politics. And every defection, even if it doesn't bring anything necessarily in terms of policy input or even an extra seat at the election, if Labour is expecting to pick those up anyway, it just cements the idea of Keir Starmer as the Prime Minister in waiting. And that's one of the most difficult things for a leader of the opposition to overcome, is the fact that the public just can't see them as Prime Minister. Well, the more people defect to him, the more that people are going to see him as almost the de facto Prime Minister already.
Coming up, as Labour's lead accelerates, what is Rishi Sunak's strategy to cling on to power?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
And Kieran, what do you see as the strategy now from Downing Street for the next couple of weeks and months? How are they going to try and shore up Sunak's position and unite the party, if such a thing is even possible at this point in history?
You know, the strategy hasn't changed, really, since they had a wobble around last Tory conference where he started talking about a host of assorted and unconnected policies, including the smoking ban and cancelling HS2. But since then, they've really wanted to focus on the economy. And the pitch to voters and the pitch to his own MPs is, look, inflation is falling, growth is starting to pick up. As they say, stick to the plan is working. And I just don't think they have a plan B, you know, that. And in fact, Rishi Sunak doesn't really have any other options. What else can he say at this point? So really, it's hold on and hope. The Tory strategist Isaac Levito talks about a narrow path to victory. I think that's been now become a narrow and steep path to victory. But it probably is the only one available to them. Just keep hammering on about the economy. Keep talking about Keir Starmer, whom voters are generally don't feel very warmly towards, even if they're preparing to vote for him. And with a little bit of kind of small boats and Rwanda stuff in there as well. That's the strategy, like it or not.
As we go into the weekend, what are you hearing about the mood within Downing Street and for Rishi Sunak personally?
Rishi Sunak personally, I think, was relatively buoyant over the weekend. I think not to lose Ben Houchin in Tees Valley and then to see the coup against him dissipate so quickly. He was actually relatively upbeat on Monday, and then he latched onto this analysis suggesting that Labour might be headed for a hung parliament. So there were a few bits of good news. I think the Natalie Elphick defection was obviously a body blow. And as I say, you know, the number 10 person who came to brief press afterwards, I think looked visibly angry about the whole thing. And in a way, it's just sucked away a lot of that momentum that they tried to build at the beginning of this week. They had some policy announcements. They had the rebels standing down. They thought things might just about be getting better. But yet again, for Rishi Sunak, as soon as things start to look a tiny bit better, he gets another blow again.
See, so it's not just defections that Rishi Sunak is dealing with in his own party. There's also an exodus of his own MPs, some very senior, who are deciding that they're not going to stand again.
Nadeem Zahawi is the latest. The former Chancellor said on Thursday that he is going to stand down from Parliament. His seat of Stratford-upon-Avon is one that the Lib Dems were going to target very heavily. They thought they might actually pull off a decapitation in that seat. Perhaps he thought the same thing, and that's why he's walking away. I would expect lots and lots more Tory MPs to make the same decision. People in Nadeem Zahawi's position, actually, people who've been around senior Tory politics for a long time, probably don't have ambitions of making leader or have run for leader before and not done it. And they probably are looking at the party at the moment and thinking, do I really want, you know, 5 years of opposition with a much smaller, much reduced parliamentary party with a lot of infighting, with no power, no influence? So I would expect more of this. One that we've been watching is Jeremy Hunt, whose seat is also being targeted by the Lib Dems and who also has had a long, very successful parliamentary career, but is unlikely, I think, to run for leader again. Now, he's put in £100,000 of his own money to his campaign in the last couple of years, so maybe he really does want to fight it. But I wouldn't be surprised if exactly that kind of person now decides that this is their time to stand down and maybe take on some lucrative private sector work.
And Kieran, what does this mean for us, for the country, to have a government that's run by a party that is barely even limping on? Does it leave us all in limbo?
I think that the country at the moment almost doesn't have a government or has a government in name only. And I say that not because things are being badly run, although you might think that they are, but because the government's not actually actively doing very much at all. There's not much legislation going through Parliament. There's not much thinking long term about what are the solutions to the public sector crisis that we're facing. What there are some short term measures, things like national insurance tax cuts. There is, of course, the big Rwanda policy, and not a lot else. This is essentially a zombie parliament. The number of times MPs have been sent home early over the last few months, despite, you know, everything that the country faces right now, because simply the government doesn't have enough business to actually get done, is astonishing. So one of the reasons I think that people are calling very urgently for a general election is just to stop this sense of drift. The defections only add to that sense of drift, I think. They add to that sense that Rishi Sunak's authority, as well as this government's energy, is seeping away.
Kieran, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ellen.
That's all for today. Kieran is presenting a new podcast from The Guardian. It's called Politics Weekly Westminster, and he's joined by our colleague Pippa Creere, The Guardian's political editor. Subscribe to them wherever you listen to your podcasts. Before we go, you might remember a month or so ago, we made an episode about the Garrick Club. It's an exclusive private members club in London that had refused to admit women members for decades and decades. Our reporter, Amelia Gentleman, had got hold of the secret membership list, which included some of the most senior judges in the country, as well as politicians, civil servants, and celebrities. This week, shamed so publicly by Amelia's reporting, the Garrick finally voted to allow women in a victory not just for the fairer sex, but also for free and fearless journalism. Today's episode was produced by Lucy Hoff and Natalie Katena. It was presented by me, Helen Pidd. The executive producers were Elizabeth Cassin and Homer Khalili. Sound design was by Solomon King. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.